Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I'm joined, once again, per use, by my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Kurt Hoag. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers, and we have a few things to discuss. We've got some projections, predictions. We've got some takes that we're going to get off our chest in this episode, which is very exciting. There is a little bit of Brewers roster news. They signed Jacob Junis. Do we know if that's how it's pronounced, by the way? It's not like Jacob Junis,
I believe it is, but that's how I pronounce it in my head and how I always have pronounced it in my head, and I will continue to pronounce it in my head. Jacob Junis.
Yeah, Jacob Junis. You're going that route. We have I have a friend who frequently he can't get past the initial impression of a name in its head. Like, no matter how many times you tell him, and he did he pronounced Giannis as Giannis for the longest time, even though everyone around him is saying the word Giannis. He continued to say Giannis. It was so upsetting. But that's some people just – they hear the name and that's how it's permanently entrenched into their brain. So Jacob Junis, who I think most Americans will call Jacob Junis, signed late Monday night. We'll talk about that in a second. I don't know if there's much more to discuss, Kurt. We haven't missed it because we did have the emergency podcast with Corbin Burns. So I think we've covered that terrain. But
the terrain.
But since we chatted, was there anything else? We've heard a lot of discourse since the Burns trade.
Oh, there has been discourse.
A lot of people are upset with the Brewers. And
do you want to talk about parking lots?
The new technology to scan my license plate that definitely won't be a major disaster on opening day. Sure. Do you want to talk about that?
No, but I do want to say one thing. I'm glad I'm not going to be – this is not going to apply to me because we have the media a lot. In my wife's car, we drive a Prius. There's like an overhang on top of that is over the license plate. That thing has fallen off on one side and it hangs directly over the license plate. So you can't see the license plate. I should probably fix it, but I haven't. And I wouldn't be able to park.
I don't think my wife's car would be able to either. Her license plate is one of those that is peeling. And I believe she's supposed to get that rectified with a DMV, get a new plate. I believe it's even free to do that. She just hasn't, you know, as many Wisconsinites haven't. So I don't know if anyone's going to be able to read that without like really squinting at it.
If I have a warrant out for my arrest.
Interesting. Tell me more.
Or just tickets associated to my car.
Oh, okay. So you went from parking ticket to warrant for your arrest. That's a big leap, but keep going.
Well, I mean, if I have parking tickets associated to my car and a warrant for my arrest on top of it.
I don't think they're using their
like the parking ticket gets you to me.
Oh,
I see. Because it's associated to my license plate. And then once you get to me, you have the warrant for the arrest thing. Now, again, this is not legal advice. This is not legally binding. I'm not saying
Thank
I have
God
a warrant
it's not.
Out for my arrest. And I'm not saying I don't have a warrant out for my arrest. I'm simply saying if I did, could I get arrested because I parked in the Molitor lot?
Oh, right. Like everyone's worried about facial recognition software in stadiums because they're going to be able to identify you later.
Yeah. They just sell this. Could the parking companies, you know, sell this info to the cops?
I would suspect that you're going to have fewer people who have a warrant out for their arrest parking at Brewers games this year. That's going to be a little bit of a loss. Also, maybe anyone over the age of 50 who struggles with the cell phone technology, maybe fewer visits there as well. I'm not sure. The parking lots thing remains to be
seen.
This
was good parking lot discourse.
Great parking lot discourse. We talked about the roof that one time, and I think that was the most remarked upon segment of our conversation about whether – what was it? What were we even talking about? It was an etymology thing, like whether the roof is we couldn't figure out what term.
I don't remember.
I don't either. I'm sure
it was
great, though.
It was one of our stream of consciousness.
The best part of a podcast is when they talk about a previous conversation that they had and don't even remember the details. That's good podcasting. So we are already off to a grand slam start here.
Do you want to talk about baseball?
I guess. Jacob Junis. I'm changing the name. Let's go with Junis on the end.
It's like Paul Janis.
Paul Janis. Jacob Junis, he pitched the last two seasons with San Francisco Giants. Sneaky good signing, I think. He was pretty good last year. Out of the bullpen, but the wrinkle here is that the initial report that he had signed with the Brewers pending a physical is that he would be part of the starting rotation, or at least he's intended to be a starter. Suddenly the Brewers have a lot of starters. They certainly don't have any at the Corbin Burns level or even the Freddie Peralta level. But, you know, in addition to Wade Miley and Colin Ray and DL Hall, who we thought was going to be part of the starting equation, Aaron Ashby, whose health is always part of the mix a little bit, Robert Gasser, now you add another guy, Jacob Junis. So I think you agree with me that it's a sneaky good signing, but I don't know. The starting piece is interesting. So give me your takes. Give me your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, you can never have too much pitching depth, especially in a season where you don't have Corbin Burns, who's been so reliable for 32 starts a year. You kind of look at the Brewers' rotation now, and like at first glance, it's sort of like, oh, they've got like too many arms to a degree. But they're going to need these guys now. You've got Freddy Peralta. You've got Wade Miley. You've got Colin Ray. You've got Jakob Junish. You've got Joe Ross. You've got D.L. Hall, who seems to be a starter. Confirmed, he said they want him to start, and he's been training to start. Aaron Ashby. Did I say Joe Ross?
I've literally already said these names just now. And now you've said Joe Ross twice to cover the fact that I didn't say him the
Joe
first
Ross
time. But thank
squared.
You.
And then others who I'm missing, Robert Gasser, Jacob Mizrowski might be in the picture later. Jansen Junk is still on the 40-man roster. They're going to need these guys to cover innings. And what will be interesting to me is do they deploy any sort of unconventional way of using their starters? Like, there are questions about every single one of them except Freddy Peralta and probably, I guess, Wade Miley, who can go like six and dive pretty consistently when healthy. Like, Yunus doesn't have a
We're really doing this. We're really committing
no, that
to
was
Yunus.
A, that was a Freudian slip. Yunus does not have a great outpitch to lefties. He's going to yeet that slider like 50% of the time. So I'm curious to see, like, do the Brewers work on the changeup? Forcing fastball is not a good pitch, so they're not going to go to that. So, like, that's his question. Joe Ross has a similar question. He's a two-pitch guy for the most part. Aaron Ashby, there's the health and the how long can he go into games, like the third time through thing. D.L. Hall, command. I don't think anyone expects him to go more than, like, four or five innings every start. So, like, that's the entirety of the back end of the rotation. And do you find a creative way to piece these guys together? Now, the sort of the problem, I guess, is like the more unconventional you get at the end of the day, you kind of do need someone to give you innings. And the guy that they're going to rely on for innings is Freddy Peralta. And like the one knock on him in his career is he doesn't give you innings.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting hodgepodge of arms right now that each kind of do something tantalizing.
We talked about how they're building this roster almost following the Rays playbook to a T, the Tampa Bay Rays playbook. And I still think it's never quite apples to apples when you're talking about the Rays, because their player development has been so miraculous, has been so sensational. Until you achieve that, you can't really run a team like the Rays do. You can't really just sell off the players, you know, a year or two before they hit free agency, because you always have another minor leaguer coming up the pike, and they really value analytics and have put a lot of money into that. So that's also part of it. They're a little different than other organizations that way. But this would be a Rays thing to have starters that are just going an inning or two, you know, not an inning or two. That's overstating it, because through the order, relying heavily on your bullpen to soak up innings. And the Brewers, it's not like that's foreign to them. 2018. Which is a team that we're suddenly comparing this one to a lot, as a team that didn't have a lot of frontline starting pitching but did have a really quality offense. That's similar, I think, to how that team was built. Now, I don't think this offense is as good as the 2018 team. I don't think anybody would even dispute me on that. I think the rotation is quite a bit better than that 2018 team. But even Freddy Peralta, that a guy who is the ace, you know, there have been times in his career where six innings is kind of it. And I don't mean times. I mean, that's the majority of his career.
Yeah,
it's really
that's
rare.
Sort of his MO, yeah.
It's rare that he goes beyond.
It's walks. It's strikeouts that just raise the pitch count. It's foul balls. Like, it's just not balls in play.
Yeah.
That's why Wade Miley can get you six innings on 80 pitches.
Yeah, I think we're going to see quite a bit of movement on that pitching staff in terms of guys up and down. We're going to see quite a bit of guys who are both starters and relievers, the Joe Rosses, the D.L. Halls, the Robert Gassers, Colin Ray. You're going to see a lot of guys serving both roles at points this season, and they're going to try to piece it together. It doesn't feel like that does not feel to me like a strategy that will yield itself to high win totals, but it also is only because we're coming out of an era where the Brewers did have that starting pitching, and maybe this is just an alternate way of looking at it. I don't know. But Jakob Junis definitely fits that role. He's a guy who's made, I think, more than 100 starts in his big league career, has also done the bullpen thing. I mean, he fits perfectly. Fits perfectly in what they're doing.
So. Yeah, it's a good signing for a good price. I think earlier in the offseason, some of the starting pitching deals that you look at now, like they were signed now, like Seth Lugo got like $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
each year for like 3 years. And I don't think he's in ton different as a pitcher than Jacob Junis.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, when Seth Lugo signed, I thought, oh, great.
Jacob Junis has
no chance of getting a starting pitcher.
I saw Eno Saris of The Athletic tweet out the Stuff Plus leaderboard for sliders, and Jacob Junis is like top 15 or top 20.
No kidding.
Best, like I mean, there's a reason he just sliders teams to death.
Yeah. The new Will Smith, the slider of death.
Slider of death.
I like it.
Trying it out as, you know, in a starter role is interesting.
Yeah.
Pitchers have had success with two pitches before.
Sure.
It's just that the sinker is like a below average pitch on Stuff Plus. But
yeah.
Like the sinker, they pair well together, is what I guess I'm saying. Curious to see if the Brewers tinker anything with him. Like, do they see if he can throw a better changeup? Because he can't throw a good four seam. Like, it just doesn't. The metrics on it are bad. Part of that is, like, from what I've read, it's because he doesn't get behind the ball well. And those kind of pitchers sometimes can like the way your fingers come off a changeup works better.
Yeah.
That if you can't get behind a fastball, it's like natural. So we'll see if the Brewers tinker around with that. It was interesting to see like a team that's pretty good with pitching, the Giants, turn him into a pretty good pitcher after being with the Royals, who are have a bit of a
spotty history.
Yeah, spotty history as regressive in their pitching thinking.
Yeah. What
so we'll see.
I'm a little worried that this means Robert Gasser is not going to have a home on the.
I don't think Robert Gasser was going to.
Yeah.
Is that spicy take?
It's not. I don't know. No, I wouldn't put it quite that high of a spot. I mean, he's not on the. He is on the 40-man roster, but he's not. You know, he hasn't pitched in the big leagues yet. I just don't think he has nothing left to prove at AAA. You know, he's not. He's not going to be a superstar. But he's. I think MLB ready, and it would be a shame. I think if they.
Yeah, we discussed in the past. I think it's like, well, there's no point in having Robert Gasser at AAA anymore. But it does. It is a good sign for your depth. If like he's not in your top five,
yeah,
that's not a bad sign.
He's going to pitch on the big league team at points this season. That is for certain. Barring injury, I could say that feeling pretty confident. That's not even that spicy at all. One other thing I wanted to run by you, and then we'll get to our predictions for the season. I've got a good setup for our predictions. I think you'll like this. But the Pecota rankings came out, and I think you and I both maybe have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Pecota rankings. I've had Jonathan Judge on the show before with Baseball Prospectus and a few other ventures, and he's a guy who has worked on this stuff a lot, really smart about this stuff. And I love talking about these projections to some degree, but also it does get people very freaked out. You know, like even though you can say there are a lot of caveats here, of course, these rosters are unfinished. There is a chance that somebody gets hurt, either other guys in the division or on your team, or things, you know, things obviously can change over the course of a season. But, you know, the Pecota rankings this year see the Brewers as bad as they've been since the 2016 season, like below 78 and a half wins roughly right now, which would be third place in the NL Central. These projection systems, they're not bad. I know a lot of people poo-poo them immediately. Well, they can't possibly know. Well, they're okay. They're okay. I would look at the Brewers in particular and say there's actually been quite a bit of variance between how the Pecota rankings saw them and how the Brewers fared. Traditionally, the Brewers over the last – well, traditionally, but over the last, what is it, 5 years, 6 years, the Brewers have overperformed Pecota four of those times. And a fifth time, it was exactly what Pecota predicted. Only once has Pecota thought the Brewers would do better than they actually did, and that was in 2022 when Pecota said they'd win 93 games and the Brewers won 86. So but mostly I think Pecota does a really good job and really has a sense that weeds out some of the noise that just fans feel about their team or other teams. I was surprised that the Brewers were so far down the totem pole, that the Cardinals were seen as the team to beat in the NL Central, and that the Cubs were then next in line. This is a Cubs team that does not yet have Cody Bellinger in their lineup because he's not officially signed. I think we kind of feel like that's where it's going. But you could see the Cubs still making a splash move, whether it be Bellinger or Chapman, still this offseason. I don't know if I feel the Brewers have that in them to upgrade what they have. So I think this is a condemnation, a little bit of where their pitching is right now. But just give me your thoughts on that, and I'll go through some of the past few years and what they have.
Gonna,
give me your thoughts
I'm
on
gonna
that.
Fight you on that sentence. I think it's a shot at the offense.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, they are projected to allow the fewest runs in the division.
Oh, I didn't dig deep enough.
One of the best pitching staffs in the National League. Oh, God. Still.
Really?
Still.
No way.
Yeah, 723 runs. Wow. So, yeah, a bit of a love-hate relationship with Picota projections. Like, I think it's – maybe it's the discourse around them that is frustrating. People are frustrated by where their team ranks. They think they should be higher. There's just so much variation that can still happen within these. And teams use this exact same thing, not Picota exactly. They probably look at it. But front offices all have their own different projection systems that spit out, you know, how many wins you're going to win over like 1,000 simulations or whatever. And so this is just a different version of that. Like, this is just how baseball works. But I do think actually the Brewers might be being undersold a little bit on the offense here.
Okay.
They're projected for 698 runs. That looks like to be – it is the third fewest in the National League this year.
Hmm.
Now, given last year's offense, I totally would buy that. Now, they finished the year with 17th in all of baseball in runs, so a little below average. I do think that was a bit inflated. Like, the Brewers were really good with runners in scoring position. Not super sustainable, or like you can't guarantee that's going to happen year over year. Like, if you just – their expected runs scored was probably about 40 to 50 runs lower, which would put them right about where they're projected for this year.
Sure.
Now, there's a ton of variance on this offense. The Brewers have all these young guys – coming up, and you know, Hunter Monasterio is the third baseman right now.
Yeah,
so it could be bad, but I don't know. Maybe it's just like you watched that offense last year, and you're like, it can't be. How can it be worse? Right? They gave 200 plate appearances to Jesse Winker, and Rowdy Tellez had 400 plate appearances, and et cetera, et cetera. Like,
right.
So many bad hitters had so like played so much, and like you kind of. Maybe it's just buying a little too much into like their top eight this year, but I feel like the offense will be closer to average than the third worst offense in the National League.
Yeah, and I think last year at this time we didn't know what William Contreras necessarily was. We didn't know he was MVP caliber. So you would think that there would be an expectation that they would be a little worse offensively last year, and you would think, well, they've essentially upgraded in our expectations. Their catcher spot is much better than we thought it was last year. First base, of course, with Rhys Hoskins is much better than we thought it was last year. You know, shortstop Willy Adames could probably do better. Third base is that question mark that you mentioned. But Christian Yelich is bouncing back a little bit. Again, our expectations have shifted. The kids that man a lot of these other spots have got to be better offensively, right? So on the other hand, you could also just say, it's really just last year's team, and they added Rhys Hoskins, a guy coming off of a torn ACL. And projection systems don't love what he's going to contribute offensively. So even though
they are – from a sheer wins perspective,
Better offensively, but like only by a player. Like you could see how someone might look at it that way. I'm going to run through what Picota has done in the past. So last year, Picota thought the Brewers would win 87 games. They won 92, so that was a difference of five. Again, I mentioned 2022, they thought it would be 93. The Brewers underperformed that with 86. But 2021, they won 95 games after being projected at 89. 2019 was right on, 89 and 89. I skipped 2020 because we all should. 2018, the projection was 86. Brewers way up overperformed that. They won 95 in the regular season, the true regular season, the 96 with game 163. So by 9 or 10, they overperformed that. They overperformed by 8 the year before in 2017 when they were projected to win 78 like this year, and they won 86. As we know, that 2017 team was a playoff contender down to the wire, would probably be a playoff team this year. I don't actually remember if there was a team between them or not. I don't think so. I think that 2017 team would have made the playoffs under the new format. So before that, the years where things were bad, they were projected to win 77 games and then actually won 73, projected to win 80 and actually won 68. Those were rebuilding Brewers teams that were likely that traded pieces away at the deadline. I don't know if that makes that big of a difference, but that is something that the Picota projections obviously can't account for. Teams that are selling are bound to be worse after they've sold, right? At least that's in theory what happens. So again, like there's variation there. There's variance, but you know, it's not crazy if Pecota says that the Brewers are going to finish below 500, which I think would be a shocking even for people who are down on this Brewers team.
Would you be shocked if they finished
below 500? I wouldn't. Shocking is too strong. I would not
be
shocked.
But you would pick them to win 82 games.
I would call it a massive disappointment if they finished under 500. That's all I'm saying. Like that would be that would be a step backward for the franchise. Yes, based on what they've done, sure. It seems possible. Yeah, but it would be a disappointment. It would be a step backward for sure.
I think this is like an 82-win team.
Mm.
So the projections are sort of within that realm. But also within that realm, and the projections bode this out, is like the middle of the National League is just one glob of week-old mashed potatoes.
Yeah. There's no one good.
It's what we all know. It's the Braves. It's the Dodgers. And then it's the week-old mashed potatoes. And because of that, the Brewers are very much in the mix, and that's probably – like I'm going to guess their computer systems say they're better than 79 wins. But their computer systems also probably say they're in a mix of mush. And trading Corbin Burns keeps them in a mix of mush, and that's why they did it. Now, I will also say you keep Corbin Burns, and it's sort of – this sort of confirms the prior of – I think this is the best team in the National League Central with Corbin Burns.
Yeah.
And that's – Pecota might not – they probably wouldn't have them in first place. But they would be pretty dang close to the Cardinales at 85.5 wins. Also, I will say the Rangers were poo-pooed last year in this system and they won the World Series.
Yeah, I was just going to ask
about that. So maybe we will – that is the end of our Pecota thoughts. But,
yeah, I was going to look and see what the Diamondbacks were at, and I'm having a little trouble finding those 2023 final predictions. But I was surprised that the Rangers
– Well, Diamondbacks only won like 84 games.
Well, I know they did. I'm just saying that were they expected to be way below? I mean they were kind of a young upstart team. No one took them seriously as a World Series team.
Yeah.
But,
The Mets I saw earlier today were at like 100 wins for like the 2023 predictions. They were projected for 100 wins.
Okay. Yeah, that didn't work.
They didn't win 100 games.
And Diamondbacks picked to 79, so that's
baseball is stupid and it has variance and we hate it and we love it because of it.
Yeah, I mean honestly the Mets I don't know how they didn't win 100 games or I shouldn't say that. I 100 games is hard, but to be a non-factor for the majority of the season, like that is stunning. Nobody could have seen that coming with the Mets last year.
Yeah.
And yet there it was. That's how it played out. So yeah, anyway, things can happen and you know, that's why there's people like us to project what's going to happen, to predict, to make our bold, interesting predictions for the season ahead.
Mm.
It went really well last year when you said Jesse Winker would be their best offensive player. Still really – I really enjoy that. I'm still really excited about that happening.
My entire strategy when I went through formulating my certainly correct predictions was – all I could think of was avoid the Jesse Winker blow up minds.
Yeah. We're going to do it a little differently this year. Speaking of which, you know, it occurred to me as I was looking through some free agent lists, like Jesse Winker, I have no idea if he's going to play in the major leagues again, but like Keston Hira still hasn't signed anywhere, right? I know there's a lot of people that haven't, but that, like, why is no one taking a chance on him? What is everyone thinking about him that we just don't see?
Keston Hira, you are a Rocky.
Should, right? Why is no one taking a chance on him? That guy's a big league bat. I guess you got to play defense at some level, I guess. Okay, so I want to structure this. We'll do four of these each, but we're gonna categorize them differently. We're gonna have four categories of predictions. We're gonna have likely, so something that we think is just likely to happen straight up. We're gonna have controversial, which is something that could maybe go either way. You could see how we'd be right. You could see how we'd be wrong. Third one, spicy, something that's kind of outside the box. Definitely. No one's thinking about that right now, but that's what we're here for, thinking ahead. And then number four, insane. We're just going to say it out loud. We're going to say it out loud. We may not even believe it.
No, I believe mine.
I know you do.
Jesse Winker's back.
God, just don't. It sounds insane, but it's just something we're saying. It's something we're saying. We're just asking questions, Carter. We're just asking questions. So we'll see how that goes.
I've heard that podcasts that just ask questions do really well.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what we are.
I'm going to go first. I'm in charge and I'm going to appoint myself first. So we're going to start with the likely category, of course. We're going to work our way up to the insanity. I am going to start with Devin Williams getting traded at midseason. I think it just makes perfect sense. If it looks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck. The Brewers did the same thing with Josh Hader, of course, with a year plus remaining on his contract. The Brewers have healthy bullpen options at this point. They have Abner Uribe, who is a future closer. Several other guys who can do the job.
D.L. Hall.
D.L. Hall maybe is the closer, question mark. The next Josh Hader. So even though the Brewers took such an optical hit for trading Josh Hader,
they should do it again.
Well, they showed this offseason that they are willing to do it again with Corbin Burns. Different circumstances, yeah. But still, yeah. It's going to make a lot of sense, and I just think that's what they're going to
JR, do. JR, what is rule number one about how the Brewers operate?
Spend little to nothing? Is that rule number one?
That was not what I was going
to
say.
Okay, what's rule number one?
Very interesting that you said that.
Sorry. just what came to
they do mind. Not operate based on PR.
Oh, well, that's true. Yes.
They don't. I'm not going to say they don't care what what the fan reaction is, but they don't care. They're going to do what they think is right, which leads to a follow up question here.
Mm.
If they're in first place.
Well,
on August, when's the deadline this year? July 31st, August 1st?
One of the two? Yeah, yeah. Somewhere in that neck of the woods.
If they're in first place, then the dog days of summer.
Well, and let's also.
Would they trade Devin? Would they do it again?
And we just saw that.
Would they do Josh Hader part deuce?
They're likely to be in first place by the narrowest of margins if they are in first place, because this is going to be a competitive division for a bunch of teams that don't have a lot separating
would
them.
Would they do it?
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would.
Speak courageously. Okay,
I think they will trade Devin Williams no matter
regardless.
The circumstances.
Okay, yes. Now that's a little – I think that ventures a little more into spicy.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very likely Devin Williams is traded at the deadline. Well, if they're not in it, it's like certain.
I am less convinced though about Willy Adames only because I feel like he is so central to what their overall ethos is.
The thing with like hitter returns too at the deadline, they've not been great unless you are the Cubs and you traded Javier Baez away 2 years ago.
That worked out, yes.
It's about the only one I can think of. Whereas Jordan Montgomery fetched two arguably top 100 prospects from the Blue Jays.
Man.
Where did he go? The Rangers. That's right.
And that's exactly what Corbin Burns just got from the Milwaukee.
Well, yeah. I do think the Brewers both the players the Brewers got are better than the top player
that the Cardinals got there,
but yes.
I agree with that.
Okay. That's good. That's likely.
What's your likely?
I think I need to tone mine back a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Now that I heard you explain it a little bit.
Okay.
Like – I think I was going a little bold, but still likely. So
you can still do that.
Okay. Well, here's what I had. I had Tyler Black as one of the team's three best hitters this year.
Interesting. Okay.
I think I'm going to tone it back to five best hitters.
Okay.
Because three best hitters would be – he jumps one of Christian Yelich, one of William Contreras, or Rhys Hoskins.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's spicy, actually, turns out, to say that. So I'm going to go five best hitters.
Okay.
By WRC+.
I love that. I mean, I'm a big Tyler Black believer, I think, and especially when it comes to the hitting side of it. It's really the question is where he fits defensively and can he fit defensively? As we've discussed, he is not on the 40-man roster, which makes me worry about him getting a spot right out of the gate, especially
He's not making the opening day roster.
Yeah,
I had that realization in an Aldi parking lot.
That's weird. Now that they have Joey Ortiz, that's a possibility at third base. And then that's in addition to Monasterio.
Monasterio?
Yeah, Monasterio. There is another option on the table, but I could see him having to come up sometime in April or May, and then I think he's going to hit right out of the gate. I think he's Brewers fans are going to love him. They're going to get really acquainted with him really fast. He can fly. He's very fast. He's Canadian, which is awesome.
Yeah, he's going to be a fan favorite, no doubt.
Yeah,
he's got Joey Weimer traits, but he is – actually, no, he doesn't. He's got Joey Weimer appeal with different traits.
I think he will, and this is the likely part of it. I think he'll outperform all what the rookies did offensively last year. I think he'll rise
above those guys. The freshman series, maybe a year too early.
You're too early. You know, can I tell you what bothers me about the first of all, the video team with the Brewers is one of the best assets that organization has. They are tremendous. They do great work. I love their
stuff. It's going to be unfortunate when they hit their third year of ARB, though.
Yes, when it all comes due at once. I know. But, like, I love the freshman series. That was really cool. However, and there may be legal reasons, logistical reasons. I don't know why, but it is so frustrating to me that they went through a whole preseason setup with
these
guys.
You wanted it all year long.
No, oh. I think that's unrealistic. That's a hard knock situation. That's a lot of production. I don't think that's reasonable. But I would have liked maybe the first homestand because then you get Bryce Tarang hitting a grand slam. You get Garrett Mitchell hitting a walk-off home run. Those things were not in the series because they stopped at spring training. We didn't get any sort of threads about those guys finally making it to the big leagues. Well, Bryce Tarang finally having that moment, that unbelievable moment, one of the best moments of the season.
Yeah, and then it was unfortunate because it all went downhill from there. Sure. Garrett Mitchell got hurt on the next road trip.
Right.
Bryce Tarang stopped hitting.
There's an episode where he's suddenly back in Nashville, and I actually really liked that stuff. I loved it, you know, going back to Nashville to kind of rediscover it and to get back in the big leagues, but we didn't get any of the good stuff. We didn't get any of the threads at the end. Oh, I was so frustrated by that. I thought it was so well done and just didn't get the capper that it deserved. But
you are a big TV guy.
I'm a big TV guy. So I think about this stuff way too much, about the drama, about the dialogue, stuff like that. This is obviously
– Yeah, I just think it's – I think it's interesting that like – I think this year's crop of prospects is way better and way more likely to be good than last year's.
Well, I mean, because
they can hit.
Yeah, they can hit, but we're also going to get
there's also pitchers.
Yeah, we're going to get Jacob Mizorowski at some point this year. Maybe I wouldn't say for sure.
Not for sure, but I definitely think he makes his debut this year.
Robert Gasser will be here this year. Robert Gasser, who's an awesome interview. I can't wait till
Slideshow
he gets here.
Slideshow Bob.
Don't think that's going to stick, but we're gonna keep
it will,
trying.
I will on this on your these airwaves and your earbuds.
Hashtag Slideshow Bob. All right, we're going to move from likely to controversial. My controversial pick. The thing I was going to do, I don't really believe in enough to actually go with. I was going to say that Hobie Milner becomes All-Star caliber.
Coward, say it.
Well, I have something else that I'm going to go with.
Oh.
Originally I was going to talk about Hobie Milner being an All-Star caliber pitcher. I really believe in him this year, but I don't – there's just too many other hammers in that bullpen. He's going to get outshined.
How much better can it be than last year is my question.
Well, I think it'd be the same as last year. I think he's finally going to get some recognition. But I have another one, controversial. Brewers are going to sign Matt Chapman.
Sure.
Should that be higher on my list? Should that be in the insane category? Or the spicy category at the very least? The longer this goes on, they have such a glaring need at third base.
Controversial. I feel like, maybe that's spicy. I feel like controversial needs to make people mad.
Okay. Well, I controversial then, maybe this does not fit as that. But, I think the Brewers are gonna go sign him. Well, I mean, he's going to have a price tag that comes down because we're late into the offseason. He doesn't have a home yet. I think they could sign him on a 1 or 2 year deal, and that would be perfect because Brock Wilkin is coming up through the ranks at some point. They need a bridge guy, and he is just sitting right there. And if they want this pitching staff to be able to survive with guys who can go 5 innings and then bullpen do the rest, you got to get another masher. And Matt Chapman does not project to be like a star by any means. But he's got the defense component enough that you would be happy with it if you're the Brewers. I think they're going to go get him. Let's go.
I do think it'll be interesting if he's not signed in 2 weeks.
Mm.
The big Boris guys that are still out there, this is crazy to think about. I mean, pitchers and catchers report in a week. And Snell's unsigned. Chapman's unsigned. Cody Bellinger's unsigned. It feels like there's a staring contest with that one, and that's kind of got some trickle down effects, at least with Chapman. Like the losers on Bellinger might feel like they have to sign Chapman, but then again, are they gonna? I don't feel like Matt Chapman is the sort of guy where it's like, oh, we lost out, you know, on this guy. Maybe the Angels would do it, but would the Giants all of a sudden be like, yes, Matt Chapman. We are so mad we lost out on everyone else. We will give you 4 years and $100 million.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that his market is going to play out the way a lot of people thought it was going to, myself included. You know what that means?
That means the Brewers come swooping in.
It means in 2 years or in 2 weeks, maybe they give him a 1 year offer for $25 million or something.
Nah, 2 weeks feels like a long time. I feel like we're going to have Chapman news by the end of the day or something.
That would still put the Brewers at a payroll higher than I think they're willing to go. But
they are so low on payroll right now. This is as low as it's been in years.
The Unish one puts them at 109 or so? Oh, no, it's only $4 million on this year's book, so 106.
They have room to do this. Oh, they certainly are way down on their spending.
I'm not arguing against them having room for it. They would have room for it even if they had Corbin Burns on the roster.
Yeah.
Have you seen what the Royals are doing? So
go get Matt Chapman. Sure. They're going to – well, I don't know if I believe that they're going to. But I think there is a pathway where that happens.
I think that take JR is only controversial if it's your pocketbooks. better.
Well, yes. In terms of making people mad, that won't make people mad. That'll make people elated.
Okay. Yeah, fair. Okay. But it's a good take. Good
you've
take.
Got something that'll make people mad.
Will this make them mad? Christian Yelich and or Wilson Contreras will not be on the Brewers this time next year.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's controversial because it makes some sense in my mind.
But I think the thought of it makes people
mad. The Contreras thing would be interesting. Like, he wouldn't be here because you just saw what Bobby Witt signed for and like you could see them already starting to move on.
Man, signing William Contreras to an extension would be a good move. It would be a good move. But I'm not sure it's going to happen since Yelich and Churio were already locked up. And this fellow named Jefferson Caro is coming up. So
that's true. It does feel like they would open a door for him.
I think people would have a right to be mad if one of those two was gone next year. And that's why maybe it's controversial. It would be a controversial move. And I'm just going to say it's going to happen. I don't know why. I'm just going to say it.
Is there such a thing as a catching prospect? Because
there's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
I know. That's the idiom. But I feel like every major catching prospect I get excited for either isn't a catcher for the rest of their lives or just is fine. But not special. Like, you know, Francisco Alvarez comes to mind from the more recent crop. And, you know, the Brewers
some
never
fellow named Ad Rutschman
okay. come to mind. So, yeah, he's good. Is he a catcher forever?
Yes.
Well, I mean, he is.
Yes.
Yeah, he is right now.
Yes.
Okay, so Adley Rutschman is obviously an example.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel the Brewers have a prospect, the guy ends up being a defensive backup at best.
You are on to something, I think, at least in my dynasty baseball playing mind. I've been trying to find the catcher of the future for like 6 years, and it just does not happen. Ivan Herrera should have been starting like 2 years ago in St. Louis, and now he's still
I don't even know who that is.
He's still like third on the depth chart, and he's good.
Right.
I also own Jefferson Caro, so shout out to Brewers Farm at Brewers Farm for putting me on that one.
Yeah. All right. The top catchers prospects by Baseball America going back to 2018. Francisco Mejia, Keibert Ruiz, Carson Kelly, Chance Sisko, Jorge Alfaro, Victor Caratini, Sean Murphy, ding, 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 Zach Collins, Danny Jansen, Will Smith is 10th.
Ooh, Will Smith's good.
Let's fast forward a couple years.
Yeah, I think the hit rate on catchers compared to shortstops is worse, but that's just the nature of the beast.
Right. I mean, it is. It's a very demanding position. It's very difficult to be good at something like that for a long period of time. And then you end up playing first base or designated hitting.
It's just so many of these guys don't hit.
Adley Rutschman is first in 2020. Then Joey Bart, Sean Murphy again, Luis Campuzano, Francisco Alvarez, Shea Langeliers, Ruiz, Hoff, Dalton Varsho, who's now an outfielder.
Hey, who is before Varsho?
Sam Huff.
Sam Huff. Oh, Rangers?
Yeah. Miguel Amaya from the Cubs. A lot of guys who are okay.
Fine. Well,
my point is, Jefferson Caro, very excited about him, but like I wouldn't plan the future of the big league team around whether or not they're making room for him. Because he's as elite as he is defensively, you know, I would say there's some questions about his bat. It's still like he will be very good offensively.
But
he's going to be good.
Hear me out.
Sure.
You're trading one of the best catchers in baseball, and he's got 3 years of team control left. Think about the haul you can get for that. You could even get Esturi Ruiz.
You could even get a boat. Yeah, you're being tongue-in-cheek.
And Kyle Muller and Freddie Tarnak.
It might be just me, but when I was growing up following this team, I would consult minor league box scores every night I could get my hands on them. This team didn't have a lot to look forward
to.
The minors were getting better. It was super interesting. And then those guys were Prince Fielder, J.J. Hardy, Ryan Braun. You know, these guys came up and were the stars of the team. Corey Hart.
Bill Hall.
Little different pathway there, but still, like, sure. You know, and they had this crop in, like, 2016 and 2017, and those guys came up and made a difference. Well, if I'm a Brewers fan right now, I'm not interested. It's cool that they have six of the top 100 prospects. It's great that they are in a position to sustain success. But they have got to, at some point, get to a World Series, or at least, you know, like, win more than one playoff series over the course of, you know, 10 years. And then we can start talking about, oh, great, they're also set up for the future. Because there are a lot of teams out there that have both. The Dodgers and the Braves are two examples. Obviously, big markets. I get it. Totally different. But, like, they have the now and they have the future. So the future is just – it's fine. But at some point, you move past that.
Yeah,
and it's
so
like, where's the now?
So your whole argument is the Creed Bratton. If I can't go scuba diving, then what's this all been about?
I don't even know the context of that reference, but I'm in on that. I love that. If you can't go scuba diving, what's this been all about?
The Brewers have not gone scuba diving yet.
They have not.
They've gone on the boat. They've seen the Dolphins.
Yes.
They've seen the Rays. They've seen the Marlins.
Oh, they have definitely seen the Rays. They have swam with the Rays.
Unfortunately, they were bit by a snake somehow on their excursion last year.
I mean, playoff success is random. So it's not as simple as saying get a team that will be good in the playoffs. You could build – I think I've said this before. You could build the best team in baseball year in and year out, and there is no guarantee that they will do anything in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's understood.
They haven't gone scuba diving, but they have sat on the boat eating apples. Mm-hmm. So my spicy.
Oh yeah.
Time for, can we go my spicy one?
You go ahead. You skipped
mine.
You
skip. No. You go ahead.
Spicy one is that Brock Wilkin is going to hit a really important home run for this Brewers team this year. First round pick last year. Third baseman. I think he's actually getting slept on a little bit by how great he was in the minors in his limited amount last year. Ton of confidence. That doesn't mean everything, but like just hearing him talk, watching him take batting practice, and believe me.
And seeing how large his noggin is.
He's a large man just overall. Look, I've been burned believing like, oh, that guy's a big leaguer. And then that guy, my favorite example is Logan Schaefer. I really thought Logan Schaefer was going to be special just by how it looked.
Me too.
Didn't work out.
And his walk-up song.
I don't remember what it was.
Return of Woman.
Oh, heavens. Elite. Brock Wilkin looks to me, on paper and in person, like somebody who is going to be in the big leagues in a hurry. I think by the end of this year, he forces his way into Milwaukee and does something really cool for the 2024 Brewers.
I mean, I could see it. The bat's so advanced. And so a little bit of how the sausage is made. You messaged me like a month ago, 3 weeks ago. You're like, I don't know if Brock Wilkin's getting enough respect. And then since then, he was on both Kylie McDaniel on ESPN and Keith Law on the Athletics Top 100 rankings.
Well, I'm glad they read my emails.
So
thanks, guys. Yes, he has moved up considerably. He is regarded now as a top prospect. But, I mean, he's like, you know, we're talking about a college bat, a guy who thrived in college. Obviously, there are tons of guys who get drafted that thrive in college. But I really, really love what they have with him.
Yeah, I mean, the plate discipline is, like, good. The contact is the contact rates are – you can live with it, certainly, when you have the 70-grade power. It's not like he's swinging and missing like a Wes Clark. Hint, hint.
Yes, and before we do that, I was just going to say, and by the way, he plays third base, which is a position they have not had a lot of in the minors or the majors. So
yeah.
I do feel like
they could also teach him first base. Like I think he could play fine first base in the future.
For sure. Yes. Okay. What is your spicy. What's your spicy take?
Someone in this chat just mentioned Wes Clark.
Someone did just mention Wes Clark.
Wes Clark hits 10 homers this year.
I'm sorry. You mean with the big league team, right? The Milwaukee Brewers.
Yes. Wes Clark. The greatest large Wes since your boy Wes Helms.
Tell the people about Wes Clark because there's no
way.
Tell
them about Wes Helms. And I was going to go on a diatribe about how I watched a 2005 game last night.
Wes Clark and Wes Helms, comparable maybe? Not really.
Actually.
Tell people about Wes Clark because there's a really healthy chunk of people who have no idea who Wes Clark is.
Yes.
Clark with an E.
Yes, Wes Clarky. an interesting draft profile when they took him, but really came into his own last year at AA Biloxi.
Just
when
mashed.
The power, he just mashed. 20-something homers at Biloxi. Then he went to the Arizona Fall League and hit a bunch of homers again. And all the scouts you talk to now are like, yeah, the power is absolutely real. It's like Brock Wilkin level power.
Okay.
Maybe a tick below. But it's really good power. He gets to it in games. He elevates the baseball.
Does he have Keston here a level swing and miss?
Yes.
Okay. Well.
People forget Keston here, who we've never talked about on this podcast before.
No, never comes up.
Is statistically a good Major League Baseball hitter.
That's true.
I'm going to put that on my deathbed.
Yes.
But yeah, Jared, what do you think about a 30% strike rate, strikeout rate at AA?
At AA. I don't think even Keston Hira had a 30%.
No, you don't love that.
I don't love that, Kurt.
But the swing and miss is going to be there. But the power is also going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be able to play first base.
Maybe.
He came up as a catcher. That's definitely not going to happen.
He's Russell Branion, which would be popular in town.
I think Wes Clark is being schlepped upon.
Mm.
As a 2024 Brewers contributor. I'm not sure when he makes it up, but I think he does. And I think I don't know. I feel like this is the kind of fellow that Pat Murphy wants to inject in his lineup at any possible turn if he can. Like he wants to shoot Wes Clark into his veins.
Wes Clark, who does have a little catching experience, if you need,
but he's your emergency catcher.
If you needed a backdoor way onto the roster,
26 homers in 118 games at Double A.
That's great. He was also he's also 24 years old. So
he was 23. He was 23 last year.
Okay, yeah, that's roughly right.
It's like average for Double A,
little north of average, but still, that's fine. That's good. 10th round pick by the Brewers in 2021. He's been drafted by the Brewers twice. Once in the 40th round in 2018 and now again in 2021.
Do you want to know why I just audibly gasped?
I don't know.
I'm on his Fangraphs page and his Zips projections.
Yes.
199 average.
Oh, God.
319 on-base percentage, but a 381 slug.
Wait, that's a big league projection?
That's a 93 WRC plus. If you project him for this, has 116 games, which is not going to happen. But that's 18 homers. So that's about a homer every six games or so.
Mm-hmm. Him making the big league roster is spicy. Him hitting 10 home runs is irresponsible.
It's not going to happen out of camp.
No, of course.
But he's going to do it.
He's not going to make the roster.
I believe in Wes Clark. It's a combination of the best parts of the 2005 Milwaukee Brewers. Brady Clark, you finished top 10 in batting average that year.
Brady Clark, great shout out. Love it. Absolutely love it. Why have you been following it doesn't matter. Let's get to the crazy stuff, the controversial stuff.
No, it doesn't. We don't need to go into that.
We
already went to the controversial. This is the insane.
Oh, right. This is the insane stuff. I said I was going to come up with something better for mine because I don't even.
Yes, I tried.
Why don't you go first? I'm going to think on this.
This is insane.
It is insane.
And it's even more insane after the Brewers signed Jacob Junis.
Mm-hmm. Jakub Junis.
But if faithful listeners of this podcast know one thing about your boy, it's that I will be holding out not only for a Keston Hira breakout for the next 10 years, but I will be holding out for the Aaron Ashby potential realization for the next 10 years.
Okay.
It's going to happen at some point, and it's going to happen, I think, this year.
Okay.
He will be one of the best 5 to 10 starters in the National League this year, and he will garner NL Cy Young votes.
Okay. I think that is insane. Yeah, because
he's not going to – okay, maybe not the Cy Young votes because he's not going to have the innings.
Okay.
I just don't see a way he gets like 100.
Yeah.
Normally you have to qualify for the ERA leaderboard or be Devin Williams.
So, right.
But I'm going to go with one of the best 5 to 10 starters in the National League. It's bound to happen.
Don't see a pathway for anything like that. Even when he's healthy, he's got like – he's got 40 big league games under his belt, 23 starts, 139 innings. It's not the teeniest sample anymore, and it's a whip of 1.367. The guy just doesn't limit base runners. And then you throw in a major injury, and I think there's a whole year ahead here before Aaron Ashby, we even know for sure what he's going to be, what effectiveness level he's going to be, and I would definitely not put my money on effective. I would put my money on
Little faith.
I think it's an icing on the cake situation with Aaron Ashby.
Of little faith.
I hope I'm wrong.
I'm going to call you Thomas.
Thomas, doubting Thomas. Love a good biblical reference. I hope I'm wrong because the guy's great dude. He's still super young. Not super young, but he's, you know, certainly could still have a very, very nice big league career. I am just, you know, I've seen what injuries like this can do. And, you know, I just haven't seen it at the big league level when he's been healthy. And maybe that's because he was experiencing some health stuff even back in 2022 that contributes to this. I wouldn't rule that out either.
You know what they taught me about faith, JR? It's seeing what you can't believe.
That's not the lesson.
Believing what you don't see.
Oh, I see. I misunderstood.
I'm on Fangraphs leaderboard.
looking at the statistical evidence.
As coincidentally.
For anything.
As coincidentally.
To justify my faith. Here's a spreadsheet.
Coincidentally, as I was in seventh grade Sunday school, I'm on Fangraphs.
Oh, man.
You go. I'm not going to talk ever.
Well, there's a lot of things I could do for insane. One would be I think the Brewers win the World Series would be insane. But,
correct.
You know, I think it's within reach, which is crazy for a team that's projected right now to finish below 500. But I do think it's conceivable. It would require some major risks like holding on to players, upgrading that they don't typically do. So I don't know if I think that's really within reach. But the one I wonder, Kurt, if – and this is insane. It's insane. I'm going to say it out loud, and I'm going to regret it, actually. Do we think – is there any chance Mark Adonazio pursues selling this team? I know there's been a lot of, like, angry Twitter chatter about, sell the team. You're not – you know, you're not spending money. The only thing that would make me think that is, you know, is this thing that people like to refer to, which is he is investing in a soccer team. He's investing in the PGA Tour. He's part of a big consortium of owners. And he has talked in the past about passing this on to his family. His sons are involved, or I believe his oldest son is involved in the organization. So there aren't a lot of signs that that's going to happen. But I wonder, you know, if – He's never lived here. He's not a Milwaukee guy, and many owners are not. They don't live in the city where they own their team. But we're kind of it's possible that the asset goes down from here, you know, because of the TV deals being what they are, which is really up in the air. The team not performing as well as it has in recent years. Just the general feel good energy around him is not the same that it was 5-6 years ago, where I think people still really had faith in him. I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think it is. But my thought would be maybe we start to hear some rumblings that it's at least possible.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen at all. But if anything does happen, it'll stay in the family. I think that's my 2 cents.
But he's not going to.
It's going to remain a family asset.
Yeah. Well, then there'd be no movement because we're not there yet.
And the other thing is like this, the valuation's only going up.
Yes.
But that also doesn't matter if you're keeping it in the family.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, I don't, it's not going
to
happen.
Unless you sell it to your kid, that'd be pretty funny.
That would be funny.
Do you have to buy, well, I guess that's not, I was going to say, do you have to buy your daughter's Girl Scout cookies? But you probably do, that's a different.
I don't know. You know, they have these big thresholds where if you sell X number of boxes, you get these ridiculous things. This year for the Girl Scouts, you can get a trip to Disneyland or Disney World. I'm not sure if you sell like the year 2024 boxes. Which, like, I got to figure there are some well-to-do families out there that are just like, sure, here's 2,024 boxes. I'll buy them and we'll give them away or sell them for profit for all I know. I don't know. Probably not that. But
I'm interested.
My daughter was like, that's what I want to do. And I'm like,
you have hooked me on the business opportunity.
Yes. They need to lower their expectations. My daughter does if she thinks that's where it's headed. Because we, I think, emptied the toolbox in terms of people that we normally sell to and got to like 200, which is a lot.
You hear that? Grrr. That's you opening a new toolbox.
Yeah.
If you would like to buy.
What I actually am is a wet blanket that has no interest in pursuing this ridiculous goal.
Or if you would like to buy a box of Lemon Delights, Lemonades. Snaps.
Yeah. That's not one of them, no. Caramel Delights?
Treats from JR's daughter.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Hit
Drop
me up.
A line.
Hit me up. I can get Drop you. If you live line. In the area, I can get you those without. You know, there's an online thing, but then you have to pay shipping.
You can no drop them to people from the press box.
That would be – that's what people should do. Get somebody well off who's just like – they would be so – the vibes would be so good if like every game a new box of, you know, Girl Scout cookies just came pouring out of the press box. That's how you win fans back, Kurt. Okay, I said it out loud. Mark Adonazio exploring selling the team. It's not – that's too insane. It's not – it's just not going to happen.
Whose is more insane? Probably yours.
Mine is probably more insane.
Because mine is correct.
No, dude. I love Aaron Ashby. I love him. And I would love – I mean the Brewers would love to see him achieve anything resembling what you're talking about because then they are actually a very good team with a very good rotation. That's just not going to happen. Not going to happen, buddy. Do we have any other predictions that we want to throw out here, put on tape so that we can replay them and embarrass ourselves later?
Yeah, I don't have any off the top of my head, but you know what I'm going to do? Look at the roster.
Who's going to be the best player? We did that last year, best hitter, best – I said Christian Yelich last year. We know who you said, but what about this year? I mean, William Contreras is the obvious answer, but maybe there's somebody else.
Yeah, can I be lame and say William Contreras?
Yeah, you can.
If I'm not going to say Contreras, I'm going to say Jackson Chourio.
Oh, that's interesting. I would definitely not go there.
Plus defense at a – premium position, so yeah. If he hits.
I think Yelich again. I think it's another good year for Yelich. Yeah. I really believe in the little bit of turnaround. I mean, there's a ceiling to how high this goes, of course, but I think
– I think Joey Ortiz is the second baseman.
Oh, I agree with you there. I think that's correct, yes. But it's going to take a while for the Brewers to get there, don't you think? We're talking like June, July before they're really ready to say Bryce Durang might be
utility
guy.
Who is the reliever who's not on the opening day roster who's going to end up having a great year? The Trevor Megill. Or the Abner Uribe.
Rob Zdrzny. That's not true. That's a guy they do have him signed. They signed him.
That's good pronunciation.
Trevor McGill, if I recall, was signed early in the season last year in April.
They did trade for him. Yeah.
So there's no acquired. So there's no. It'd be impossible to give you a name because if it's similar circumstances, somebody that they fell into.
Okay, not the Trevor McGill, the reliever, Hoomst is not going to be on the opening day roster. Who ends up having a Trevor McGill type impact.
Yeah. Look at Elvis Peguero, we could say, because
he was not on the opening day.
He wasn't.
No. Brian Hudson is my answer. Thanks for asking.
I knew that's where you were going.
Clayton Andrews for you?
No. Nice guy. Shouts to Clayton Andrews. If he's on the big league team, I'll be blown away. Let's see. I can't think of anybody that really jumps out that I think isn't already part of the fabric here. I mean, you could go Thiago Vieira. Would be one that I think makes some sense. He was kind of an exciting guy that was pulled up last year, made maybe two appearances. I don't even know if he made more than one. But he's somebody with a really electric fastball who I think could come into his own. I am super pumped to see what Abner Uribe does this year. I think big moment for him. I mean, he got through some of those early jitters last year where you thought this could go one of two ways. He could be electric or he could walk the ballpark. And there were a couple times when he walked the ballpark, but mostly he was just electric. He had a crazy good rookie showing. He had an ERA under two when it was all said and done. So really interested to see what he brings to the table this year because he could go to the All-Star game, Kurt. I could see that happening. He could be the new Devin Williams.
That would have been a good take from you.
Yeah, I should have done that. Dang it, I should have done that. Oh, I didn't think about it. Abner Uribe All-Star. Let's put that on tape just in case it happens. I think that's it, Kurt. Any other thoughts?
No, I'm just going to be singing Return of the Mac in my head all day.
Mm-hmm, and looking at Fangraphs and thinking about faith. That is a genuine banger. Absolutely amazing song. Mark Morrison, Return of the Mac. It's heard at Badgers games, Brewers games.
Badgers games, you're right.
It lives on in Stadia. It's quite fascinating, actually. We will be back to talk more about parking lots and dome closures. Roof closures and various other things that have no tangible benefit to you. But that will probably come next when there is news. The spring training begins here shortly. Todd Rosiak, our colleague, will be going down there.
2023 Sports Writer of the Year.
2023 Sports Writer of the Year. Todd Rosiak will be going down to Arizona to get things started. And then after that, we'll be getting into some of the regular updates probably at the start of March when we have some position battles to discuss, some roster stuff, and then we get right into that season. March 28th, the New York Mets, David Stearns' New York Mets, hosts the Milwaukee Brewers in the season opener. It's the Twins at American Family Field on April 2nd. Kurt, thank you for joining me, man.
Sure.
Always good to see you here in the studio at Casa de Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. We look forward to chatting with you again very soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.